our development toward a state of emotional liberation, most of us seem to experience three stages in the way we relate to others and their needs. In one stage, which I refer to as emotional slavery, we believe that we're responsible for the feelings of others. We think it's our job to make everybody happy, and if they're not happy, we feel responsible and compelled to do something about it. This can easily lead us to see the very people who are closest to us as real burdens. Taking responsibility for the feelings of others can be very detrimental in intimate relationships. I regularly hear people tell me that they're frightened of intimate relationships because of this. They say things like, every time I see my partner in pain or needing something, I feel overwhelmed. I feel like I'm in prison, that I'm being smothered, and I just have to get out of the relationship as fast as possible. This response is common among those who experience love as denial of one's own needs in order to attend the needs of the other. In the early days of a relationship, partners typically relate joyfully and compassionately to each other out of a sense of freedom. The relationship is exhilarating, spontaneous, wonderful. Eventually, however, as they define the relationship as serious, now the partners start to assume responsibility for each other's feelings, and from then on, things can go downhill very fast. If I were a partner who's conscious of doing this, I could improve the situation by acknowledging it and saying, it's hard for me to see your pain. As soon as I see it, I lose connection with myself. Unfortunately, most people haven't reached the level of awareness that they can bring that out into the open like that, and instead they often blame their partners. They say, you're too needy, you're too dependent. When we do that, it makes the situation worse very quickly. At another level, another stage, we become aware of the high cost of assuming responsibility for other people's feelings and trying to accommodate them at our own expense. When we notice how much of our lives we've missed and how little we've responded to the call of our own soul, we may get angry. I refer jokingly to this stage as the obnoxious stage, because now, instead of taking responsibility for other people's feelings, denying our needs, doing for them, and then later feeling resentful, now we say, that's your problem. I'm not responsible for your feelings. In this stage, we're clear what we are not responsible for. We no longer want to think that we're responsible for the other person's happiness. We don't want to be always having to deny ourselves and do for them. Unfortunately, we're not quite clear yet about this idea of responsibility, what we do want to assume responsibility for. So when we're only in this phase, we often rebel against the other person's feelings in a way that's not good for us or them. As we emerge from this stage of emotional enslavement, we may continue to carry remnants of fear and guilt around having our own needs. Thus, it's not surprising that we end up expressing our needs in a way that sound rigid and unyielding to the ears of others. For example, during a break in one of my workshops, a young woman expressed appreciation for the insight she'd gained into her own state of emotional enslavement. When the workshop resumed, I suggested an activity to the group. The same young woman then declared assertively, "I'd rather do something else." I sensed she was exercising her newfound right to express her needs, even if they ran counter to those of others. To encourage her to sort out what her needs really were, I said, "Do you want to do something else, even if it conflicts with my needs?" She thought for a moment and then stammered, "Yes. No." Her confusion reflects how, in this second stage, we have yet to grasp that emotional liberation entails more than simply asserting our own needs. It requires asserting our own needs, to be sure, but in a way that communicates that we are equally interested in the needs of others. I recall an incident during my daughter's passage toward emotional liberation. She'd always been the perfect little girl who denied her own needs to comply with the wishes of others. When I became aware of how frequently she suppressed her own desires in order to please others, I started to talk to her about this and told her I'd enjoy hearing her needs. When we first broached the subject, she said, "But, Daddy, I don't want to disappoint anybody." I helped her to see how her honesty would be a precious gift and not a burden. I also suggested she could empathize with people when they are upset without taking responsibility for their feelings. A short time later, I saw evidence that my daughter was beginning to listen to what I said and try to integrate it into her life and express herself more openly. A call came from her school principal, apparently disturbed by a communication he'd had with Marla. When I went in to talk to the school administrator, he said, "Marla came to school today dressed in blue jeans." I told her that isn't how young ladies dress. And she said, "Bug off." Well, I was thrilled. Marla had started to liberate herself and started to listen to her own needs and not feel that she always had to please others. Yes, I could see that I hadn't made clear how to express our needs in a way that shows also respect and understanding of others, but I knew that would come. And so I was celebrating, but it was a little hard for me to get the school administrator to celebrate. So when we reach a third stage of what I call emotional liberation, whenever we do respond to the needs of others, we do so out of compassion, never out of fear, guilt, or shame. We make sure that we don't suppress our own needs in responding to the needs of others. Therefore, when we do what others want, it's fulfilling to us. We also have the consciousness that it's a gift to other people to hear our needs. And so we express our needs with the Santa Claus energy that I mentioned earlier. So emotional liberation involves stating clearly what we need in a way that communicates we're equally concerned with the needs of others as well as our own. Nonviolent communication is designed to connect us in this way, that everybody's needs get met.